not the blood coming out of it.
Hi, everybody. Sorry about the delay in talking.
Oh, this?
Yeah. You need to also be on mic so we can hear you on the camera.
Oh.
How about now? Great. Okay, I'm Seth Vidal. I wrote a good portion of Yum and other things, and I'm here to talk about dependency solving as it reflects on package management and stuff, whatnot, for Philip Orr in conjunction with Paul Nazareth, and I think Jeremy might chime in because he does that. The biggest thing that I think a lot of people miss out on is like how the process works in terms of what it is that we're doing when the system is waiting for things to do. What problems we run into, what things are make it harder than it looks originally. And then what we're doing now and what we're trying to work on. And that was the wrong one. There we go. The process is pretty straightforward. You acquire user demands, whatever the user is looking to do. Oftentimes it's just update, which is the general make everything on my system as current as possible and make it work and everything happy. Sometimes it's update in some bizarre set of things they want updated, but yeah, at all times everything must continue working, whatever that may be. And that's one of the difficulties is making sure that whatever the user is asking for is not an unreasonable request and balancing that out with actual functionality. After that, once you know what the user is looking to have installed or looking to do, you look to see, well, what is left that's not, when we do whatever the user wants, when we add in a new package, when we remove the new package, or remove the old package, when we update things, what's left over? Is there anything that's left dangling? Is there any point where you're trying to run Firefox and it just won't work because you're missing the library, or you're trying to run a GNOME terminal and it faults out because, well, you don't have a shell, for example. I mean, there's a whole set of things that are possible to handle, and that's what requirements deal with. Requirements list out those things that you need. So once we know what it is you're looking for or how to get out of the situation, we've got to pass through to see what has to happen. The trick is that if you know that something needs to have, for example, if all you have the information on is that GNOME terminal needs bash, you don't have a lot of information as to whether, you don't initially, from just that example, have a lot of information as to whether or not GNOME terminal needs bash and therefore we should install bash, or GNOME terminal needs bash and therefore we should remove GNOME terminal. So it depends a lot on which direction you're going. If you're removing bash, then you should pull out GNOME terminal too, because it's a dependency relation to bash. But if you're adding GNOME terminal, then you should be adding in bash because GNOME terminal needs bash. And that's a silly example, obviously, but it's an example of a situation that seeing which direction to travel or which path to take is not immediately obvious based upon the information that you're typically fed back from RPM or from the dependency solver, which is something needs something else. And that's one of the difficulties is figuring out what the path is. So the other thing we get into, and we'll get right here, is with figuring out which packages provide which things, there's sometimes multiple resolutions. Now, sometimes multiple resolutions are someone has set up two repositories with the exact same content. That's the easiest situation in the world. You get two identical packages, and you just choose whichever one, you move along. But if you've got, for example, let's say you've configured three different repositories. You've got base, you've got updates, and you've got some extras repositories, which is a radical concept there. And you decide to install a package that requires foo. All it says is foo, nothing more. Doesn't need a certain version, just needs foo. Base has got foo 1.1 for i386. Updates, quite mistakenly, has foo 1.2 for no arch, so it's just whatever architecture. And extras has something that provides foo 1.3, but is actually in bar for, let's call it i686. How do we figure out which one's the best situation and which one works well for us? Well, unfortunately, the immediate answer a lot of folks give you is ask the user which one they want. And if any of you have ever had the misfortune of having to deal with that situation, you know that's the wrong answer. That's almost always the wrong answer because the user, however well educated they may not want to answer that question, may not be at a console to answer that question, but more times than not, may not be capable of answering that question. Because quite frankly, the difference between foo and bar, got no idea just by looking at the package that's listed out there. There's no way of doing it. So we need good defaults. We need good ways of doing automated stuff. And if you've ever been to a GNOME talk about human interface design, you've probably heard something very similar to this at various times. that we need a way of doing things so that the user has to answer as few questions as possible, at least a few questions that are horribly confusing to them. So here's what we do. First off, we look for the packages and we say, okay, let's look for compatible arches. So we don't need to look at PPC arches on i386. Now with QEMU coming out, that may all change and make life more complex, but for right now we look at compatible arches, things that you can deal with. The next step is we take a look at all the compatible arches that give us the highest version of all the arches. So we have i386, i686, and x86-64, and we're on an Opteron. We take a look at all the highest arches and say which of these is the best one, and we have a list of them. And from there, we take a look and say, okay, now we've got the best arches and the best versions of those arches, and we look and see which one is the most best. Yes, the best of all those arches for your platform. Now, that's not so bad. Typically, it's pretty straightforward. And then we're on our way. The only trouble we get into is we've got two packages which have more or less, that don't have the same name, so we really can't compare versions, because that doesn't really make any sense. But they both provide the thing we're looking for. They are the same arch, so we can't toss one out for there. So we're in a sort of a murky situation. Right now, the behavior originally adopted in Anaconda, which I think UpToDate and I know Yum and I'm pretty sure Apt and our whole set of things adopted, was shortest name wins. So if you're originally done in RPM, and the reason for this is not as bad as you might think. The first thing, it's an easy test. It's straightforward. There's nothing obvious. But when you think about debug info packages, which many times provide the same binary or provide the same situation, you don't want to install the debug info packages as a resolver unless the package it's asking for is a debug info package too. So you need to know and keep track of what's going on. But debug info packages were one of the original reasons for doing it. Now you get into all sorts of fun cases, like for example, PostFix always wins over SendMail. Now, in my opinion, that's just fine, but that's a different story. But there are all sorts of interesting little cases where if people know more about this, they'll start truncating their package names because they know they'll win more often. But it's not the best situation, but unfortunately, the additional tests to figure out the best way of doing it are harder without adding a bunch of very odd whitelisting and blacklisting in to say this one always wins over this one in comparisons. But there's no great way of doing it. It's just a length of name. So, as I answered, the reason we don't ask the user is because the user frequently doesn't know what's going on. Now, there's work being done right now to make it so that the user can do more about that. If the user doesn't like something we've installed and they want to pull something out, we're going to let more advanced users do some crazy things. And it's mostly because we're opening things up within a library and it makes more sense to do it that way, so that programmers can do interesting interfaces and interesting things that they may choose to do. And it also gives us some flexibility for more advanced install systems. Now, there's another option that people have suggested, a lot of people have suggested, which has a great deal of merit. If you've ever had packages from, say, for example, Fresh RPMs, or DAG RPMs, or AT RPMs, or things of that order, and you've installed, let's say, Zine, something like that, it wouldn't make sense to install Zine from Fresh RPMs and the libraries, for example, Zine Lib, from DAG RPMs. They might be a better version, but it won't make sense. It won't match necessarily. And it, from a consistency standpoint, it doesn't make sense. So there's some arguments so far that are suggesting maybe we should say if it's from a certain repository, make sure that any dependencies, unless we can't find any resolution, make sure the dependencies come from that repository as well. And that may be a point with some merit. So that's how we deal with multiple resolutions right now, is just shortest name, best arch, best version. And actually I reversed that. It's best arch, best version, shortest name, in that order. Typically, we don't have to deal with it very often, but it's a situation that does pop up from time to time. And it's going to happen more and more often as we have more programs duplicating the same functionality. Multiple HTTP servers, multiple MTAs, multiple whatever. They provide something simple and we go forward from there. The trouble, of course, is most users don't care and don't want to know, so we need to keep some of the stuff away from them as much as possible. Now, here's where it all gets further murky and unfun with dependency resolution, multilib. Most folks in here know what multilib is or what the implications of it are. The idea is straightforward. It's for 64-bit platforms that can run 32-bit binaries, can execute 32-bit code, to let them do it, to be able to do it reasonably seamlessly within the same environment. The solution was propped upon as Well, and there are certain occasions where we're going to have binaries that will overwrite each other. There are going to be, for example, take a look at your ldconfig binary and all your x86-64 boxes. If you have glibc i686 and glibc x86-64 installed, it'll be one or the other. It can't really be both. Multilib came up mainly because we had situations where we couldn't just rebuild the binary. AcroRead comes to mind. Flash plugins, most of Mozilla in many ways, because you want to be able to use the same plugins. That's that one aspect. OpenOffice is another one. OpenOffice, last I checked, is or is not building an x86-64 sanely. Is that anyone in here who knows?
It's not.
It's not? Okay. And I don't think it's building on PPC64 at all either.
No.
Right. In that situation, we're going to need to run these things. Now, some other folks have come up with solutions to this, which are build the CH root with all the 32-bit binaries, stuff everything in there, bind mount directories and redirect it out so that the user can access it. And while there are a lot of problems with multilib cleanliness, I think that that's probably less clean. So that's what happens. However, we have to deal with this when we're resolving dependencies, because we have to figure out which package is best for it. Because oftentimes we say, provide foo. Something has to provide foo. We're never told, is it foo i386, foo x64? So we have to get more details on it and gather this from our dependency solver. These are some of the problems that comes out of it. This is what we run into. So,
this is just my set of difficulties.
Next up, this is further in difficulties. Special case packages. I'm pretty sure we've all recently experienced we're going to have a kernel every week no matter what, if you've been using Fedora Core 3 and Fedora Core 2. Thank you, Dave. And what that means is you typically don't want to update your kernel. You don't want to have a new kernel replace the old kernel, because things happen. Stuff breaks. It just occurs occasionally. So you want to be able to backpedal the kernel so at least your system will boot. So that means the kernel and all kernel modules are special case. They will always install only, meaning they just push a new one in place, the other one stays there, and we make the new one the default boot one. Pretty straightforward, but it means you have to sort of mess around oftentimes to make sure everything matches up. And if someone tries to install two kernel arches of the same version, the world gets unhappy, because that's not really a workable solution. So it's all the special cases which make some of this code a little more dry. And then the next situations, which are always fun, arch-specific migration. So you've got a NoArch package that becomes an i386 package. Now, that situation's great. No one really complains if NoArch becomes i386. People complain when i686 becomes i386, when i686 becomes x86-64 accidentally on the machine. Things get weird, and people aren't liking it. If you were around for Red Hat Linux 9 era, working with fresh RPMs, you probably experienced glibc wasn't all the way synced, so we only had i386 installed, and did you boot with glibc i386? Because that's bad. Don't do that. And it blew up NPTEL and made everything stop working. So we have to be careful about what things change are. Right now, Yum's got a fairly coarse-grained ARC concept, which is you will either have always the same ARC or you will have never the same ARC. We'll just go with whatever is available. And I'm working on that right now to distribute that out so we can say glibc, the kernel, maybe X, and a handful of other things never change ARC. You have to force them to change if you want them to change. But most other things can migrate freely back and forth, so that when system config something becomes an i386 package from NoArch, we don't have any trouble migrating up to it. The next problem is obsoletes, which I'm sure some of y'all are familiar with, looping obsoletes, some foo obsoletes bar obsoletes foo, wash, rinse, repeat, just keeps going over and over again as the packages oscillate back and forth. It's happened in Red Hat Linux 7.2, it was in 7.3, some of the stuff got removed. There's ways out of it, it's just not pretty all the time, figuring out what the user really wanted when they asked to do certain things. And then arch scoring in general is just a fun little situation to figure out what the best arch is for the best situation. And these are just some of the difficulties to deal with. Finally, users are the biggest difficulty with dependency solving. Many users want it to do what I mean. I don't know what I asked for, but whatever I meant for it to do, it should do that. It went so far at one point we had a user who explicitly excluded packages, went out of his way to exclude packages and make sure that it typed them in the conf file, exclude these packages. And then was upset when Yum wouldn't deal or interact with those packages because they were needed for dependency purposes. He said, well, I didn't mean to exclude them for dependency purposes. I just wanted to exclude them for, you know, when I typed them in on the command line. To which we responded, so you didn't want the packages, but you did want the packages, except for the situation where you didn't want them. And we considered adding that mode into the system so that we could just add in a sort of mode. My hands wave, and yum, hands wave, make magic occur. We decided it would just be confusing to insulting. But we understood where he was coming from. It would be useful to go ahead and resolve dependencies based on things, but you never want those things to be explicitly installed or available from the command line. It's just not pretty, and it causes problems elsewhere. Okay, so currently here's what's going on. Anaconda, if you haven't seen or you will be seeing Jeremy's talk on the Red Hat installer past, present, and future, that's him, and he'll tell you all about it. System config packages coming up very soon with Paul and his new implementation things. UpToDate, UpToDate's been in Red Hat Linux since, what, 6.2, 6.3, or 6.2? Okay, 6.2 or 7.0. UpToDate does some really interesting things with regard to maintaining compatibility and maintaining all sorts of all sorts of interesting command options for your enterprise users. And that's a whole set of other things going on with it. If you want to know more about how UpToDate does everything, I'm probably not going to tell you more about it right now. I'm going to go on with Yum because, well, that's what I have to look back on it. Yum. I'm going to go ahead and throw out some problems right away. If you've downloaded Yum or using Fedora Core 3, metadata import time. You're parsing a fairly good-sized XML file almost every time, and reading through it can take a while on slower machines. On faster machines, you've probably not really noticed it. That's going to be our number one thing we're trying to fill off. Number two, memory footprint. Situation right now is when you read in the metadata, you've got a lot of stuff sitting in memory, and you've got to deal with it somehow. And that all of a sudden brings up on a normal set of repositories, brings up the footprint to about 40 to 50 meg right away. And that's not including once RPM gets started and does some interesting things. There's some folks doing some great work that I'll discuss in a minute that are bringing those numbers quite far down. Flexibility in face of dependency failures. If anyone's here who updated to Rawhide recently and you've gotten through all the processing, dependency solved, right up to the end where something conflicted and it fell over and said, aha, it conflicted, have a good day, and left you at a prompt after waiting through the process. That situation is something we want to deal with as well. Putting the more advanced user, not the new user, putting the more advanced user into a place where they can select what to do at that point, where they can choose to get out of it, or they can be set at a place where it says, well, dependency resolution failed, here's why it failed, if you want to do something about it, here's a shell, have a good time, and lets you take care of the problem or do something like that and then continue with the transaction rather than going through. So the biggest thing we're looking for in Yum is correct and safe behavior. If anyone's ever experienced a dependency cascade on any of the dev solvers or anything available, it is I installed bar, and bar either conflicts or obsoletes foo. And therefore, since foo's going away, the rest of these packages go away too. Now, the trouble is that, and what in Yum, Yum will never erase as a part of an update or an install procedure. Never will do it. There's no way to get to that point. And if you find one, let me know because I'd like to hear about it. Since that's the situation, it puts us in a better place for safe behavior with users. And I say this because users don't want to have the experience of, would you like me to remove the following 200 packages from your system in order to install Xeen? It's not a comfortable question to answer, and I don't think I ever want to have to present that answer to them, or present that question to them, and that's what we're looking for. Correct behavior more or less means installing the right arch, installing the right binary, or whatever the case may be, doing what we think most users expect to have done, which is get things right, get them updated, and get them reasonably correct. The non-goals. We're not looking to provide ways of doing --force. We're not looking to provide ways of doing --nodeps. Not interested even in the slightest amount of providing all the bizarre command line options that RPM makes available to you. If you want to do the really crazy advanced things, that's what RPM's there for. Do them. That's the sort of situation I'd like to avoid. I'd like to avoid we've got 5,000 command line options, you can use any one of them, and if you don't like the answer, just tell me to ignore the problem and it'll go away. Since I'm betting a lot of you in this room have or are maintaining a lot of systems at this point, or system administrators in fact, if you've ever ran the command rpm-e --nodeps, for example, and said, oh, well, it'll be fine, and walked away, I'm sure you realize that it just isn't fine, and you really shouldn't walk away, because whether you know it or not, it's going to break. And that's the situation we're trying to avoid. It was one of the original goals that we put into it was we're not going to do nodeps. Nodeps is too dangerous, and it's just too many ways of screwing users up. So that's sort of the gist of Young's problems, and I'm sure we'll have questions later. I'm sure many of you can give me more problems that you've seen if you want to get to it. So what are we doing? How are we going to deal with some of these? A guy named Jeesh Hostel and Minnow Smits have been working on some fun code, which implements an SQLite 3 or SQLite backend for the metadata caching locally. So you read in the XML file the first time, pushes it all into a DB locally. The next time, it just increments the data. So if only 5 packages have changed, you really only need to see those 5 packages, and it goes in pretty quick. At that point, our memory footprint drops. All of a sudden, we're just reading the data. Oh, we're reading it out of the SQLite database. We don't have to go very far. Our read-in time drops because the data is just there, especially for consecutive commands against the same repositories. So if you're running one command, which is the Young list, and the next immediate command is an install, and the next command is a remove, you're not going to have any changes. No sets of packages are going to have to change, or no sets of repositories are going to change, and things are going to be very, very fast and more or less instantaneous, which is the way we want it to be. Right now, work's being done by me on making it possible to do to dump you out to a shell in the event that you have a dependency resolution problem. So users who want to do it, and I think the option, there's never going to be a command line option, but there will be a config option, which is, if it breaks, let me fix it. Something ridiculous that you're going to have to type in that will take you some time. So in other words, this is for users who already know how to read man pages. It will dump you out to a shell and say, yep, it broke, here's the transaction, deal with what you want. And that will help out a lot of users, right? A lot of users have complaints about this when they're trying to install and debug and deal with Rawhide, which I completely understand, I do it all the time. So that's sort of the gist of where we're going with this. The new and fun things Paul will be talking about, because his stuff is sexy and mind boring. He has pictures, it's great. But if you want to see what's going on and talk to folks who are doing some things, there's two places to go. Young Devel List, which is just mostly folks talking about what things we need to do and put together and how those things are supposed to work. And then the metadata list, which is more or less very extremely low volume list, except for an occasional person who goes, hey, it'd be nice if we had this in the metadata. And the metadata, in case anyone's wondering, is the XML files that are stored on the repositories that tells you what stuff is where, instead of downloading all the information about it from packages itself. That's my talk. Paul's going to be up here in a second. Before I go away, anything someone had questions about?
What version do you think that SQL-type thing is going to be?
So we just branched in CBS. So 2.2.0 will be released soon. And at that point, the head branch is opening up for all the SQLite stuff, which will be in the 2.3.0 for a while until we get a place for it to be stable. Right now, it's not bad, but we need to make sure it's tested. There are lots of miscellaneous cases where we just missed a call somewhere and had to clean it up. But it's mostly just subclassing and moving things around. It's not too bad. It's not as invasive as I thought it was going to be. So, yeah.
I'm curious. In addition to the problems that are very notable on laptops, the market with slow hard drives, is that Young, unlike human doing copy processes, we've been told this might be for most things, or it's RPM, which basically closes laptops.
Closes laptops.
In the sense that while you're running it, you can run basically no other applications because they get IO starved.
For one of those RPM.
Right. I'm curious if we have ideas about improving that.
Well, a couple ways to improve that, and some things that will help, especially when it comes to kernels. I talked about this on the Fedora Devel, I think, list recently when Sam Barbashik posted the RPM needs to go on a diet thread, if any of you are following it. The gist of it is, if you've got 25 odd kernels installed, RPM gets slow. It's very, very slow. And the reason it gets slow is it has to do a lot of checking, fingerprint checking on the files to make sure there's no overlaps.
Well, according to Arjun, what's actually happening is RPM's doing a sync on every package installed, which closes the disk elevator code and causes a lot of awkwardness.
The problem is that you have to do that, otherwise the machine crashes halfway through an update for our RPM database.
Okay. So I'm just curious if we can figure out a way to do this, because, well,
I think they did that. change the database back and fix the kernel, although it's really good. That's the thing, is it's really database and lots of items. Lots of items that are not in the database. Basically, the PI is different.
You had a question, I think, over there first?
Yeah, I want to know about Arch to no Arch options.
Arch to no Arch?
Yeah.
So you want to go from like an i386 to a no Arch. Set exact arch equals zero and pray. The reality is that if there's something else there, the arch will, I mean, i386 scores higher on no arch every single time. And it does that on purpose. Now, if the version is higher on no arch, you'll get there. What's going on is Matthias Yao made a good suggestion, which was don't have it be so coarse-grained. Don't have it be you can either be the exact same arch or you can be whatever arch happens to be the highest version. Have it be these packages have to be exactly the same arch, and everything else can be whatever is highest version. And that's what I've been working on doing, getting that out of there so it's easy to go. And that's all that has to happen, but you'd be surprised how hard that is sometimes to get worked into the code, because it's an extra set of things you have to check rather than just checking for a stat of, or state of a one variable. Does that explain that some, or?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Tom, you have one quick question?
Yeah, there's a question from the net. One of the users says, as a last resort, I run some incompatible RPM sets by just installing the non-standard set under another prefix root directory, copying the existing RPM DB to a new directory, and installing using RPM --db path --root. Would it be possible to set up a similar system for incompatible repositories or vendor packages?
Wow. Okay. So he wants to install something into a separate ch root and then push them back into his main path? Tell them to post it to the Yum development mailing list, and I'll see what I can do. That sounds, Yum development. I'll read it and go. Without any further ado, Paul Nazareth, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. Oh. More recently, we've got up to date. Written in Python, graphical and text interfaces, and it speaks to Red Hat Network via XMLRPC. You can do all sorts of funky stuff by having a server-driven things. You can get the URL to text and things like that, which are things that we can't do with Yum because at the moment, because Yum, by its very nature, we're pulling files off the server, which means it scales really well. I think something like Fedora. I mean, doing like the update of F1 FC3 release, which was like, I don't know, many hundreds of packages.
When FC3 was released, there was 700 megabytes of packages that were released for updates in the same day.
And that was really sort of like, you've done your install, you do Yum update, and you know, if everyone's polling like central server and stuff, that's like, ow. So, we can't do that in Yum. We also have system config packages, which is based on groups which are defined in a console, which is just an XML groups file. Yum can actually use that. So if you saw Jeremy's talk, you saw him doing a Yum group install, which uses that. Currently, no other repositories are really using a groups file, but it would be nice. So, and it's perfectly possible for non-core repositories to organize some groups, get them out, and that will help my job to provide a nicer user interface, get better, but we'll need to do some work on that with the repository maintainers. But the problem with system config packages is really it's sort of like media-based only, it's not really sort of repository aware.
It actually had a repository in Red Hat, certain Red Hat editions were private.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Issues based. Basically keeping it simple. I mean, 700 meg worth of updates, you know, on like day one, providing a nice way for the user to say, you know, these are the updates, this is what they're for, you know, and, you know, not making it, there are too many packages. Users don't care. Like, the users who will be using the things like pub and stuff, rather than Yum command line or RPM command line, really shouldn't have to care about individual package names for the most part. It's just too confusing. And, you know, we have a mechanism in RPM for groupings, but that's really fallen apart. It doesn't really represent reality that much anymore. So we can't really use those for any same purpose at the moment. And then we've got all the additional data which isn't available to us. Things like the sort of like errata details, things like Seth and Brian were discussing the desktop files and having that sort of data available. It's currently not available through RPM, but possibly through enhancing the metadata format, we'll be able to provide that information in a supplemental manner, and that will sort of make my life easier, make Brian sort of put a nice happy face on this. And yeah, keeping people happy. People want to do quite complex things. I don't care about those. They can use Yum, they can use RPM, they can use RPM to CPIO. I don't, you know, really, I want to provide an update tool. I'll want to look at a more complicated tool as well, but I think that's going to be quite different. And got some ideas on be talking with these guys about it, and that will all be done mostly via Fedora config list, so if people are interested in that sort of side of things, when I'm sort of starting to think about that stuff, I'll post there. But yeah, okay, future plans. One of the big pains at the moment is we've got a lot of sort of replication of things doing the same thing. We've got system config packages, we've got up-to-date, we've got Yum, we've got RPMDB Fedora with RPM minus minus A, and Anaconda. You know, it's a large range of things. It'd be really nice if we just sort of like had a single way of doing things with a nice library, and you know, we can put lots of different views on it, and let people do the more complicated things, let people do the more simple things. So part of the work that we're looking at doing throughout FC5 probably is to make Anaconda use essentially the Yum libraries as its back end, and also making it repository aware. because really people are wanting to say, this is my system, it's cool plus extras, and I want to do an upgrade. And we want that to happen seamlessly. So, you know, and, you know, part of this is going to be providing sensible tools for key tasks. The first one I'm looking at is updating. And the important thing is trying to keep everything sort of clean and simple and compliant with the HRG guidelines things. Okay, and yeah, we want to support both online and offline media. So, you know, whether that's generating sort of repo data on the fly from if someone's got a CD, or looking at sort of like bundles for Yum, you know, which could be something as simple as just the zip file of RPMs with the metadata in, or using a file format such as ZAR, which is what the Darwin guys have binned. But that's like a XML headed archive format. But yeah, we'd like to be able to support like everything that people do through various means. And some things will just say, we're not going to provide you with a graphical suite for that. You can use RPM. Okay. I'd like to introduce Pub. We have a logo, it's very important. And thank you very much, Dad. yes. For those of you who are not quite aware of the sort of the etymology of Pub, it's a package updater, or calls updater. In the beginning, there was Yup. Which was the Yellow Dog update, and Seth took that, I believe, and modified that. And Yum, which is Yellow Dog update, modified. So it's only natural to have a tool called Pub as an interface for this. But, well,
it's a cute yellow dog.
Yeah, and basically the aims I'm trying to do is basically work with you guys here, because we've had lots of demand from the community to have a Yum GUI. There have been various attempts, and you know, some of them do things in different ways. Lots of them doing screen scraping of Yum from the command line, which is a really horrible, horrible thing to do. I mean, I believe Seth was telling me that there's a Tickle TK Yum screen scraper, which, yeah. That's not something we really want to be providing.
That would be perfectly fine if Yum had designed its had output appropriate for input to another program.
So we're humans then.
Yeah. Yes. You could do that. You know, like that RPM has a like send mode, which you could use for doing things like that. But it doesn't. There's also a Python version which also does screen scraping, which is a bit odd because, especially with Yum 2.1, it's got like library type functionality. So yes, I'm trying to avoid doing anything like that. And yeah, it's a case of sort of we're getting there. It's still very much a work in progress. It's I'm aiming for FC4. It won't be in test one just because of here and some other stuff which has been going on. But I'll try and get snapshot releases probably to people on redhat.com or link to those and people take it and play with it. So yeah, that's all going to be discussed on Fedora config list. So let's just see where I've got to. Yeah, okay.
I have varying states of rawhide on my laptop, so I'm not happy there right now.
Yeah, it's Okay, you might be able to see a demo right now, because my laptop doesn't like the... Okay. Yes. Okay, I will not show you a demo. However, I will show you a video of a demo. Okay.
You're on 1, 2, 3.
Are you on FlexCon 1?
Yeah, I thought it was.
Not anymore, or not.
Okay. Oh, well, I will send a link to a demo. I mean, this is really just a sort of, I use VNC to SWF to capture, like, this is me actually being able to use the young library and stuff. It's not that exciting yet, so. But it will be. And we have a logo, which is the most important thing. Does anyone have any questions for either me or Seth?
Actually, I just, things that are going on that will make life easier, I think, for everyone involved with doing odd things like that. Yum announcement supports install some arbitrary path to a binary, and it will find whatever provides it installs it. You can do resolve depths to do all sorts of crazy things. You can just do yum resolve depths foo greater than 1.1 and just have it find it and go for it from there. The thing that Paul was talking about earlier, which I think was a good point, so right there, before, we had a list of all the package names, which is just ugly. It's not really much better than we have right now. What we're trying to get away from that and get to a place where we can just say, the following groups have updates. So we have a multimedia group that has the updates, and you click a multimedia group, and it shows you what updates you have, which System Config packages had a reasonably good display of. The trouble is that we sometimes have packages that just don't live in a group, so we have to have some way of doing them.
Actually, the enormous advantage is that we can actually extract information from not just or if we look at the things that actually install .desktop files, we're installing the etc.net.p, which are the servers.
Right.
Are sort of the packages that are most interesting in everything else sort of dependencies.
I can definitely see how those advantages come from that. We've got to get the metadata to get that information out there. And a lot of that is we'll all get into what is a comps.xml or a yum-groups.xml file, which stores information. So you have a group of repositories that all provide multimedia group. And the multimedia group this list here with all the packages from all those repositories which have been updated. So if someone wants to turn off one and go on, that's what we do. And I think that's what we're driving for, is trying to make these interfaces a lot easier and a lot less frightening with 3,700 packages in the distribution. Any other questions?
I'll turn off everything that installs.
You'll have to come to my talk later.
Wait, what was that question?
Can we turn off everything that installs?
Yes, can you, please?
Like I said, you'll have to come by talk later this afternoon.
Just an install class away. Anything else anyone wants to know or complain about? Complaints are welcome. Well, welcome to
the install. It's
then the process program, you can do things like adding packages on the system there.
Paul, can you repeat that question?
Okay, the question was, Are there any plans to extend pub to deal with additional packages? At this time, I'm really focusing on trying to get the updates working and trying to get them insanely done. Once that's done, it would be fairly straightforward to add, because install is reasonably straightforward once you've got the framework in place, but whether it makes sense in the same GUI or not is something that I need to talk with people about. One thing that I was really looking at, things like the Rhythmbox UI and stuff, for sort of like looking, because basically you've got a library of repositories like libraries or you can browse your package list and stuff like that. I don't know whether that makes sense at all. That's just something I've got randomly going on in the back of my head. So, but yeah, the aim is to provide a tool to enable you to do that, whether it's the same tool or not. At this point, probably can't completely say.
When did such and such a happen to happen, I visualized that, so like, I know something broke in the last 2 days.
There's a gentleman in Terra.
Please repeat questions before.
Okay, the question was essentially being able to obtain a historical view of, or sort of like looking back to see when events happened.
Yeah, sure.
There's a guy named Terry Rostin who's sent in some patches for Yum that I've yet to merge. Not or merged all of them. But essentially what they do is they dump out the data into a set of files or a number of files into a history directory or maybe a var log Yum directory, which all it is either XML files or flat files that say, this package was updated by this package on this day. This package was removed, so that you could ideally have a script that simply does history libc, you get any time libc was touched in the log files that exist. The advantage of it is that then other programs could view the same sort of information and see what's changed.
Another question, why is this package getting updated?
The question was, why is this package getting updated feature? Paul touched on this in his talk with regard to errata information. Something that UpToDate does, and UpToDate using RHN does, is it's able to say, this update is a security update solving the following CVEs, or this update is because we broke the last one. And instead of just giving you change log information, which isn't terribly effective, that is a question of how do we get that data and distribute it around in the metadata or distribute it around to the mirrors so that it scales. Because if everyone has to query one server at Red Hat, it's going to be a bad day. It's going to be a real bad day when someone tries to figure that part out. And so that's what we have to figure out, the nicest way of doing that in a method that makes it possible for users to query it and they won't have to sort through 55 megabytes of update information.
I was actually thinking about the dependency side of things, so that I'm getting an update to this package because this other package has a...
So you want the dependency tree of foo was updated, therefore bar had to be updated.
Yeah.
If you look at the current Yum code in the 2.2.0 branch, it should be listing out dependency relations in the transaction report. If you're looking for more information about specifically what package is dependent on what things, if you're interested in doing some coding, it's a very short path to go from this package to all the things this package requires in the tree. It's real straightforward doing that for the repository
that
it is.
I think you also said that that'll be in the logs too as well.
Yeah, why they got updated, especially if it's deep dependencies, may not be, because after a while it gets silly to have some information there. But we'll try and get as much as possible, and it's a work in progress. So suggestions are welcome. Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
Yeah. Okay. I've just got a quick question for Seth. One of the things that you mentioned was dumping a user out in a shell when something was... thing, or dumping a log of what was going on, what stuff was going on, things, so advanced users.
Giving advanced users a place to go, so that they have a situation they can deal with.
Is that going to be like the Yum shell, would you have like these are the steps I was having in like Yum shell syntax, and then you can go and edit them and run them through?
More likely than not, the plan I have right now is if we get to a place where the unresolvable dependency callback is invoked, say, if you got this set, drop me to a shell, list the transaction, and say, here are the problem areas, solve them.
And if the user wants to figure out a good way of solving it, and they found that it's a problem in DevSolver, that it's not dealing with the situation properly, great, submit a bug, do what you need to do. But it lets people updating Rawhide get around problems so they can get on with the thing, which has been the single biggest complaint people who are following through for is, yeah, someone submitted some packages and it broke the world, and now I can't get this one package updated with this command, and I really want to. So, and that's the situation. Now, again, this is intended to be completely and seriously for advanced users. We do not want people doing this who don't know what they're doing. So, luckily, you're not able to really cripple the system unless you do something uniquely done. But that's the best we can offer. Does that make sense? Anyone else? We're close to running out of time, I think. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.